sharing, I'm an alcoholic. And I'm also a recovered alcoholic because that's what the book says happens. We recover from a hopeless state of mind and body. And there's a lot of new people here. So I really want you to know that we do get better. We get really, really a lot better. Bill, thank you very much on behalf of you and your group for having me here. Thank you to my loyal ladies. We travel together. We do a lot of good things. That first reading from Working with Others, it talks about the fellowship growing up amongst us, and we'll have vast friends. All those promises have came true for me and many, many, many more. But I didn't come here like I am standing before you today. I started drinking at a very, very, very young age, and my parents were kind of like the hippies of that generation, and it looked very attractive to me what they did, the bongs, the homemade beer, the homemade wine, the balloons on the top of the homemade wine. It all looked very, very, very attractive to me. So instead of looking at, I don't know, education and that type of stuff, the partying and that scene is what looks good to me. And that's what I wanted to do when I grew up. And I would sneak beers and just do all sorts of silly little things like that when I was a kid. And when I was a teenager, I started drinking quite heavily, and I couldn't understand why most of my friends didn't drink like I did. I would stay until all the alcohol was gone, even at a very, very young age, and I would black out, and I didn't understand it was a blackout. I just thought I couldn't remember what happened. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of nervous. I never feel like I've spoken to this many people. I'll take a breath and talk to God for a second. So anyway, when I was a teenager, it was during the 70s, and for me, it was actually easier to get drugs than to get alcohol. Not that I didn't do a lot of drinking, because I did. But my alcoholism went one way, and my drug addiction went another way. And what happened for me, as far as alcoholism went, is I would go out with my friends, with permission from my parents, and having all good intentions of coming home. I really and truly did. And what would happen is that I wouldn't be done drinking, and so I wouldn't come home. And I kept getting in trouble over and over and over like this. And what I realize now is that I always was an alcoholic, and I always drank alcoholically. And the book talks about that, that we lose the inability to control how we drink and the amount that we drink. And that's what happened to me from the very, very get-go. I never had control over the amount I drank. But I didn't see that as a problem. I didn't even think anything of it, to be really, really honest. I went on with my drug path, and unfortunately that led me very, very quickly to prison. And when I got out of prison, I thought that, okay, I just won't do drugs. And the reason I mention this part is because in my H&I work, I come across a lot of young women who thought, just like I used to think, that it's okay to just drink. And unfortunately, my just drinking went on for nearly another 20 years. I absolutely was completely powerless over alcohol for many, many, many years. And before that time, I did have a young child when I went away, and I couldn't believe, there's so many different just discrepancies in my life, and I couldn't believe, because I saw the person that I felt like I was, but that wasn't the person who was doing the crimes and the behaviors that I was having. And I couldn't believe that they would send a mom to prison. I couldn't believe I had to be away from my child and all of this, because on the inside I really felt like a good person. And while I was in prison, I actually attended meetings, and I did the first four steps. And I had an idea of a higher power, but my higher power at that time was the God of my childhood. It was a religious God. It was a God that there was shame and there was guilt and there was, you know, remorse for everything that I did. And my mother was Catholic, was raised Catholic. My dad was an atheist, so my religious upbringing was really kind of skewed. And I remember my mom saying, well, good girls don't do this and good girls don't do that. Well, I did all of those things and a hell of a lot more. And so I thought, well, I guess I'm not a good girl. And so that really, really played into my problems with God. I believed in God. I always have. But I had a real problem there. And like I said, I did the first four steps. And I knew there was a solution. I knew there was a different way. I did not do a fifth step because where I was at, they didn't have the structure that they have in some prisons, which is a complete AA panel of inmates alone. They didn't have that in place, and that's really, really important where you can do that fifth step, and then you can go on and do the rest of the work that you need to do in there. I didn't have that. All I had was H&I people that came and talked to us, and then I went and I did those first four steps by myself. So again, my message here for new people, if you don't have a sponsor, you got to get a sponsor. You got to do these steps with someone who's done the steps and done them out of this book. At least that's my experience. And so anyway, when I got out, I thought it'd be okay to drink, and drinking is what I did. And what was really weird, during that time that I didn't drink, it had progressed, and I didn't understand progression. I didn't understand how that worked at all. I didn't know why I drank more, and I didn't understand why my ability to hold more, my capacity was greater. And I remember this young son, we'd go to Indian guide events, and wherever we went, I would be drunk and just horrible, horrible behavior. And people would say, man, somebody's been drinking. I go, I know, it's that guy over there. You know, when I put it off on someone else, it surely can't be this nice young lady. It just went on and on and on. And I'm not going to go a lot into a drunkalog because I really don't like doing that. What I want to share with you is what the solution is. And when I was in my early 30s, well, before that I got married, I don't need to say this other than dismissively, but I got married again. And I had, in my early 30s, I got pregnant again. And during that time, I stopped drinking. And what happened is that physically I was wonderful, but my head, I was insane. I got really, really, really crazy, and I became this horrible, horrible hypocrite of anybody who could drink. I just felt it was just so horribly unfair that I had to not drink. And today, I know that it was only by the grace of God that I was able to stop. Well, I didn't stop until I knew I was pregnant. So for those 6 months that I was able to stop, it was only by the grace of God. And you know, on the same day that I had my son, my husband had to bring alcohol to the hospital because that's just the way my disease was at that time. I had to drink. It was like I had never stopped. And as soon as I wasn't pregnant, I immediately started drinking again. And I had one other interval of not drinking. And that time, it was from where it talks about on the bottom of page 31, one of the readings tonight. I told Bill I really like the readings this group chooses. And one of them that I did was physical exercise. And I was able to get extremely healthy physically, really, really, really healthy. But again, I was nuts. I was just absolutely nuts. And I couldn't understand why. And we were up camping, and everything was fine. Everything was wonderful. And, excuse me. The idea came into my head that wouldn't a whiskey be nice? And I thought, you know, I haven't drank for about 13 months, I think maybe 14 months. I think it would be okay if I had a whiskey. Well, my whiskeys look like a 32-ounce cup, two-thirds whiskey, one-third soda. And I'm like, I was really proud of myself because I only had two that night. See, I can control my drinking. And that's what I told myself. See, I'm not alcoholic. I can stop. Well, the next day I drank 20-plus beers while we were four-wheel driving. And by that Monday, so that was Saturday, Sunday, Monday, by that Monday when we got home, I absolutely could not remember how to not drink. I absolutely had no clue how I had not drank for those 13 or 14 months. And I thought, man, I am really, really, really in trouble. I have a problem. Unfortunately, I was unable to do anything about it for a few more years. I would wake up every single morning, or I would come to every single morning and say, I can't do this again. I cannot do it. And my reasoning with God was this: God, if you don't want me to drink, take it away. Take it away. I didn't realize that I had a part in it. I didn't know that there was action on my part. I certainly didn't want to go to those meetings. All the time I knew about AA, and that was the last thing in the world I wanted to do was go to those meetings for the rest of my life. That was like a death sentence to me. I did not want to do that. And I know so many people that say, yeah, that's how it was for me. I knew there was a solution, but I wasn't ready. And how I look at it now is I was so, so arrogant that I was just stubbing my nose at God. That's how I look at it today. It was just complete, total arrogance on my part. And sometimes I would even get the phone book out in a drunken stupor and look at Alcoholics Anonymous and write the phone number down. And then I would come to in the morning, and I'd be too sick to call. And then this type of thing would just went on for over 2 years. I don't think I picked my sobriety date. In fact, I am sure I did not pick my sobriety date. my sobriety date is the date that God came between me and alcohol. What I remember is coming to, just like I did on all those other mornings, and sitting in my bed saying, I can't do this one more time. And I did not have a Bill W. experience with sounds or lights or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. What I had was a feeling in my heart that you have to go to those meetings, and that is the only way. And at that moment, I did my very, very, very first surrender ever. And I said, I think I can do this, and I don't know how. And, oh, I'm going to back up 2 weeks before this. It's a cute little story. I think I'm really, really smart. Unfortunately, I still have that character defect. And so I thought I would go to the library and check out the book Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? And I thought I would read myself sober. If I can just read that book, I can find out how those people do it without going to those meetings. And I really, really, really and truly thought I could do this. Didn't work. So anyway, I had the book in my house because I had that library book. And so I'm looking through the book, and this part's really, really vague because I was very, very, very sick physically. I had, and I'm not going to go into it, just for people with alcohol, they know what it's like to be extremely sick physically. I would open the book, and I would be able to read a little bit, and I don't know, well, you know, I do know. God directed me to the doctor's opinion, and what I would read is what it's like to be an alcoholic. And I kept saying, oh, my God, that's me. That's me. That's how I drink. That's how I think. That's what I do. And I was like, man, those people were right back at those meetings. And I was not able to go to a meeting then because I was too sick. I was not able to go to a meeting for several days, in fact, because I was too sick. But I just stayed in bed. And I really don't remember anything except for the part that I just shared with you. I just don't remember. But I do remember when I first called Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was on a Thursday morning, and I called the hotline. And a man answered, and I was just a mess. And all I can remember saying is that I need a meeting, and he was trying to describe a meeting where I lived, and I had no idea what he was talking about. And mind you, I had a very, very good sense of direction. I had absolutely no clue what he was talking about. He goes, you know what, let me turn off the bacon. It seems like this is going to take a few minutes. And I said, okay. And he directed me to a meeting after two or three times of trying to tell me how to find something. I was finally able to comprehend what he was talking about. And I went to this first meeting, and it was a new meeting. And all I could do was sit there and cry. And women gave me a list of phone numbers, and I thought, what the hell are they talking to me for? I hated women. I hated people. But what I came to find out was really I hated myself. I really didn't hate anyone, but I thought I did. So then that night I had to tell my husband, and this husband, he was my drinking buddy, but the crazy thing about this buddy was that we would fight every single night. We would get drunk and get in a fight. I mean, that's just like the sick, normal routine. So that night I had to tell him that I'm going to go to AA because I really have to stop drinking. I hadn't told him in the previous days, and he got all weird. Oh, my God, you're going to be talking about codependency. They're going to be talking about me and all this crazy fear he went into. Well, none of that stuff ended up happening, of course, so that's not what we do here. And I went to a nighttime meeting, and at my home group, we have the I don't want to be here chair. It's that chair by the front door where you can escape real quick, you know, if it gets too scary in there. So that's where I sat. I sat there and cried at that meeting, and then women brought me that phone list again, and they talked to me, and I'm like, why are you talking to me? I don't like you. And I'll tell you what I saw in that room. I saw a lot of hope. I saw people that looked really clean and happy and smiling, and then people would say how much time they had, and they would say they had 30, 60, 90 days and get their chips, and I'm like, man, they look really good for only 30 days of not drinking. And I didn't feel that way on the inside. I felt really, really, really dirty. And another part of the physical part was that I couldn't shower without a drink. I couldn't do anything without a drink. I couldn't answer the phone, open the door, go to the store. I couldn't do anything without alcohol. So I was pretty dirty, too. Bathing was not quite where I was at yet. And it's really gross, but, I mean, for people that get to that physical state, you know what I'm talking about. But they talked to me anyway, and they were very kind and very loving, and those people with 30, 60, 90 days ended up being really good friends, and those people with years, I thought, oh, hell no, they're lying. There's nobody that can stop drinking for that amount of time. But what I came to find out is they don't do it years at a time. They do it one day at a time. Like, oh, that's really cool. Okay. I can see how people can get years, and that, you know, kind of came at 6, 8, 9 months, something like that. Oh, that's what people accumulate time. So I kept coming back, and back then I used to ride a Harley, and so this one girl thought, because I rode a Harley, I should probably have a sponsor who rode a Harley, and so I got assigned a sponsor, and I didn't know you're supposed to pick your own sponsor. I didn't know any of that stuff, so I said, okay. And I went over there, and I've had a handful of sponsors, and it's God's plan for me. It's exactly the way it's supposed to be. And I have been blessed with wonderful, wonderful sponsorship. The first sponsor I only had for 9 months. But she got me through my steps, and she got me through my steps quickly. And my life got really, really good. One of the first things that happened was about 6 months sober. I thought, if this is good as life gets, I will be happy. I will be perfectly happy. And I have to tell you, standing here today with a little over 5 years, I would have sold myself so short, it would have been fine. Because in 6 months, I still had physical problems. Some of those physical problems didn't go away for actually over a year. Some of them closer to 2 years, because I did a lot of damage. And so then my second sponsor, Julia, she taught me about God, and she taught me about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she taught me that you can talk to God anywhere, anytime, no matter what. And like before the meeting, we have something that we were taught, that before you speak, you always need to pee and pray. So when I was doing my praying part, I was walking through this building part talking to God. And I come over here on this side part over here, and it has the pictures of the people that come here. And that's actually the field that I'm in. I'm looking at these faces and going, these are the faces of God looking right back at me at this place I'm going to be speaking at. And that's the type of stuff that Julia taught me, this wonderful, wonderful appreciation for everything that God does for us. And she also taught me about this big book. She taught me that every single problem that comes up, anything that ever happens in my life, that there's a solution in this big book for that. And today, I'm not going to talk a lot about the book. Normally I do. I'm a total big book thumper, but I just don't feel that that's my calling. That's not what God is asking me to do tonight, so I'm not going to do that. But I am telling you that that is my belief, that I am a hardcore big book thumper. And I guess Julia was probably my sponsor until I reached my terrible twos. And boy, when I was two, there was a whole bunch of us that got sober together and actually stayed sober. We all rode bikes, and we went on road trips, and we go to Yosemite, we go to the coast. And I'm telling you, that part about the fellowship part, what a promise that is. Those people just absolutely made my life wonderful, and they still do. But as I grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous, my life and my values change. Now it's more of a family path, as it's supposed to be. But then I needed those friends constantly, because that's the only way that I could keep hanging and keep doing this stuff. There's a part in the back, in the part of the AA tradition, that we hang together or else someone will die alone, and I believe that. We have to hang together. And so that was my second sponsor. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about God, too. I told you that my mom was raised Catholic, and then my dad was atheist. And then my parents got a divorce when I was 6 or 7, and so my mom got excommunicated from the Catholic Church. I think that's how you say it, but she got kicked out. Anyway, and so my upbringing as a child was, we got put on a bus to go to Sunday school, and I liked going because, number one, we got to ride a bus, and number two, they gave us candy. The church part of Sunday school, I could not relate to it. I felt nothing. I got nothing from it whatsoever. When I was a teenager, I thought, well, maybe I'm an atheist, and that didn't last very long. And what I know today, the reason is because I believe that God is inside each and every one of us in a very, very special way, or a higher power, or whatever you choose to call it, is in each inside of one. And so my being was not going to allow that type of thinking. But then what it did do, and this is as a teenager, I thought, you know, I got a real problem, because one religion says that they're right, and then this religion says they're right, and they say they're right. I don't understand, and I can't agree with that, and I don't buy into that. And so it's really cool that as a teenager, I really found one of my truths, that I don't think that there can only be one right religion. I think that they're all right, and I think that we all need to find our own higher power in our own way, in the way that God chooses to reveal him, her, itself to us. And so for me, I wish I could say that I remembered how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I most certainly did not. That's the truth that happened as a teenager. When I came in here, all I knew was that religious God. But I'm reading Bill's story a few months in, and it's like, oh, I'll be darned, I can pick my own conception. This is really cool. And as I studied the big book more, that's where I learned that God is inside each one of us. And it's like, wow, this is really, really powerful. I can have my own complete conception and my own God idea. And I do crazy things. Like, for example, I had to go to Verizon to get my son a cell phone yesterday. And I know that I don't hate people, but I still have a problem with salespeople because I don't want to be sold something because I still think I know what's best, I know what I need, and I don't want your help. Thank you very much. So I get out of my truck, and I say, God, I need to go into Verizon, and I need to bring you with me. And so in my mind, I'm visualizing holding God's hand, walking into Verizon. Please let me talk kindly and lovingly to this salesperson, not get mad at him no matter what, and state what you need and be kind and polite about it. And I have to do things like that, but that's how my God is. I just take him along where I got to go. Same with coming up here. I got to go on stage now. I need you most definitely tonight. And for me, it really, really works. It can be that simple. And for me, it has to be that simple because I can't have any of that complicated religious part. It just absolutely will not work for me. And what else? And then I have another sponsor, and with her, we really, really hit those amends, because my belief in amends is after you have that, and I'm sorry for people who haven't done the first, that might not be what I'm talking about, you got to do the other step first. But when I teach people and how I was taught to do amends, you got three different columns. One is the ones I'll do, the ones I might do, and then the column of hell no, I'm never doing these. Okay? Three columns. And if you're real honest, I think probably all of us have had all three columns, the ones I'm never doing. So I was kind of moving over from that first column to the second column with this third sponsor. And one of them was financial amends, because when I was doing my first client doing it, I wasn't working, and I didn't think that it was right to use my husband's money to pay my amends. I did not think that that was morally, ethically right, and I did not think that that was what my God wanted me to do. So when I was working, then it was time to start working on those financial amends. And so she helped me and taught me, and there's a lot of stuff that we did, and I'm really proud to say that I'm almost all the way paid off. I think I have one more payment. But I redid my steps for my fifth year, and I'll be damned if there's not one I forgot, a big, huge financial event. I got to start all over with another financial one, but that's okay. That's just all part of how it works. And I'm also very happy to say that I'm going to start working on that third column, with doing my steps all the way through again. There's people in that third column that now move to the middle column, but yes, maybe I'll do them, but maybe not today, but I will do them someday. There's nobody in the hell no column anymore, and I'm really, really glad about that. And how that came to pass is God, is having a God that I know that I can trust no matter what, that it's not going to be that horrible, it's not going to be that bad, it's going to be all right. What else do I want to talk about? There's so much. I want to talk about employment, because employment is an issue for a lot of us alcoholics. As I said, I was in prison, and when I got out of prison, part of my parole was I had to do something. You can't just sit home. And so I went to secretary school, and I was in secretary school, and it was good. It's good. I got a job. But being a secretary sucked. I just hated it. So then I went to college, and my drinking at this time was not crazy. It got crazy, but it wasn't crazy at that time. And I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I messed around with a few different things. I ended up getting a degree in psychology, and I worked in my field while I was going to college in the last couple of years, which was working with people who are developmentally disabled. And I got a job at a camp, and it was wonderful, and that's when I fell in love with this population of people. And then I was working in group homes, which is like the stepping stone while you're still in school. And then my drinking had gotten crazy. I ended up getting fired. And because my shift was 3 to 11 or whatever it was. It was afternoon. It was a swing shift. So I said, okay, I know what the problem is. I got to work in the morning because I can't not drink until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So then I got a job in the morning, and it was a wonderful job. It was a wonderful, wonderful place where I worked. And then that's when I got pregnant. So then I worked at this wonderful job for about 8 months before I was unable to work. And then I was off work. And I thought I was going to stay home and be a stay-at-home mom, but what truly happened was my alcoholism got so bad I was unable to work. I became unemployable for the last nearly 10 years, like 9 years and 9 months of my drinking. Completely unemployable. I could not work because I couldn't do anything without alcohol. And it was very, very, very unfortunate, but that's just the way it was. And I would make up these kind of jobs just to appease my husband, like run errands for elderly people, because I could do that real early in the morning and then get back home and be safe. So when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did my steps, and I was feeling really good, And then I wanted a job. But because of my past, it's really hard to get a job when you have that work history of how come you haven't worked for 10 years? And being a stay-at-home mom nowadays is not a good enough reason for employers. They're not okay with that. And also having the felony arrest record also made it very hard because in my field you have to be fingerprinted and jump through all these hoops. So I'm putting in applications and putting applications, and I swear it took forever to get a job, and I would go to my homework and I would whine and civil before the meeting, I'm never going to get a job, they'll never hire me. And some of the old-timers would say, you just got to do the footwork, Jerry. And I hated to hear that, and now I say it myself. And what happened one day was I was going to the store, and I drove past this place, and I said, huh, wonder what that place is. And I thought I should be dressed up and go put an application in there, and I did. And I got hired, and I actually got hired in Reedley, and I live in Fresno, and they're like, well, are you willing to work there? I'm sure, whatever. And then I was honest, you know, something I definitely recommend, be honest with everything. I told them about my crime, I told them what I did. It was a violent felony, which I don't mind sharing openly. And I said, but that was a long time ago. That was a long, long time ago. It's not the person I am today. And they took a chance with me. They absolutely took a chance. And again, that's God working in my life. This is where I'm supposed to be. And same with going through the California licensing process. It's insane what they make us do. It is insane the hoops you have to jump through. But you know what? Every single step of the way, I took the next step to the next indicated thing. And today, I'm working in my field. I've been there for a little over 4 years. And all that heart, thank you, all that heart is in my past. That heart is just all in my past. And now what I learned, and you know what, unfortunately, I have to tell you, this is something I learned really recently. Jumping through hoops is something that normal people do all the time. I really didn't know that. I did not realize that was a part of life. My friend Tiffany and I were talking about that last night. I really did not know that. I don't like to do anything hard. I want everything to be easy. I want it given to me. I don't want to work for it. But what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous and all that is just, that's bull. That's not the way life is. You got to jump through hoops. You got to do the work. You got to do everything you want, everything I want, I have to work for. And so today, I don't mind standing here saying that I'm proud of the work that I've done. I'm proud of my family. That's another thing I should talk about is family, because families really get hurt by alcoholism. My husband, when I first came in here, like I said, you know, he wasn't real happy with me coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, but he realized that I needed to do what I needed to do, and he gave me that space, and you know what, God bless him, and we're still married, so happy story, God bless him. He continued to drink, he continued to drink alcoholically, just like we always did together, and I'd go to my meetings every single day. The only place I felt safe those first probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 months was in meetings. If you could have just rolled out of bed, I would have been happy just to stay in the fellowship room, just to be safe, just so I would be safe and protected. But anyway, what happened is I started working my steps, my life started changing, and I had that psychic change the book talks about, where all my ideas, emotions, and attitudes changed, and I became a different person. And I didn't talk to him about God. I didn't talk to him about the things that were happening to me. All I did was walk through my day and was as kind and loving as I could be, and believe me, it wasn't real good in the first couple of years. It wasn't. That's a learned behavior for me. But I tried, and when I would say something rude, disrespectful, not be polite, I would make amends immediately. And he kept seeing me do this over and over and over. And what ended up happening is he started saying he was sorry when he was disrespectful or not polite or not kind and loving. I was like, damn, have you been reading my book? And it was just like the weirdest thing. It ended up being the day before I was to start the job that I just got done describing, he got really, really, really drunk. And I ended up having to call the police on him. And I had enough AA in me to know how to do and what to do the right thing. I knew that was what I had to do because he was having abusive behavior. He wasn't abusive to me, but he was verbally, well, he was being verbally abusive. He wasn't being physically abusive. And what happened after I called the police is he quit drinking, just stopped. And what I came to find out is he's that hard drinker the book describes. Now, and this is so disgusting, he'll drink a beer, open a beer, set it on the table, and fall asleep. And it's just the weirdest damn thing. But he's not one of us. He is not an alcoholic. What's also happened is my faith in every single situation that I can easily say, you know what, God's got it, we don't need to worry about it. And I don't talk about it, I don't preach it, I'll just say one little offhanded comment like that, and you'll be, oh, yeah, okay. And over time, now he's the one that brings that stuff up to me. It is just one of the miracles, and in the family afterwards, it talks about the families coming together and being put back together and being made whole again. And for me, those promises have came true. The promises that people talk about at the meetings all the time on 83 and 84, you know what? Those are just the icing on the cake. But the majority of the promises are in all of the rest of the steps. There's a huge, huge amount of promises throughout the entire book. We could have a whole speaker meeting just on the promises. Even just on the first half of the promises, there's that many just wonderful, wonderful things in there. Another thing I have to talk about, I'm like trying to see the clock, I think it's like 10 till. Another thing I have to talk about is service. In my home group, when you have 90 days, well, first off, when you first come in, and for me, there was absolutely nothing that was a suggestion. Everything was, you need to do this, you need to do this. And I'm like, okay, okay. When my sponsor asked if I go to any length, I would have done anything. So I'm going to run naked outside, wouldn't have cared, I would have done anything. Of course, that's not what we mean when we say that. What we mean, are you willing to go and do exactly what this book says we're supposed to do? That's what we mean. And that's what I make sure I tell people. But anyway, in my home group, they wanted me to pour coffee. I'm like, oh my God, do you not know how sick I am? You want me to pour coffee? But I did it anyway. And I did it, and I just, my God, I can't believe I have to do this. And then at 90 days at my home group, it's not, again, it's not a suggestion. You got to share the meeting. You got to sit up in front. And I would have to do this meeting after meeting after meeting. And I think it took me back there because I remember her like five nights a week, you know. You have to be the chairperson or the second or the chairperson, yeah, the meeting. Like, my God, aren't they tired of seeing me and listening to me? But what it did is it made me get to know people. It made people come and talk to me after the meeting. It's like, huh, okay, that's pretty cool. And then at 6 months, you have to be a secretary. So then I was a secretary. And what's really cool about that, then you got these new people come with their court cards and you get their court card signed. So then it gave me an opportunity to say, hey, yeah, I only got 6 months. This is pretty damn cool. Like I told you, I thought life was just the most perfect thing in 6 months. And it got me to talking to people. It got me to open up about myself. And I guess early on, I started sponsoring people. And sponsoring is a really, really funny thing for those of you who do it. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Unfortunately, most people don't make it. And that's really, really sad. Most people don't make it. And so I had a lot of people who didn't. But when I was about, I guess, a year and a half or 2 years sober, that's another thing we're taught in my lineage. You sponsor people. You know, you work the steps, you go teach them what you were taught, that's what I teach too. Since you work the steps, you've got enough time to sponsor. I know some people don't agree with that, but I think that's real important. Anyway, so I'm sponsoring this lady, and I finally have a success, and she's sober now. In fact, she's secretary of a meeting tonight, or she'd be with us tonight. And then I had a whole bunch of people that went back out, and it was just tragic, and it's so sad, and you always wonder what happened to them. But then I got a couple more, and they're sitting here tonight, and they both have over 2 years of sobriety. And they are, I don't want to embarrass you ladies, they are the highlight of my days working together. We still go through the book. We read the book together. We work the steps together continuously. And then I have Melissa. I have somebody who's new, who's just doing it all for the first time. And it is just the most absolute wonderful blessing to be able to do sponsorship. But then I had to take it to another level, and that's where my H&I work comes in. And what we do, and meaning all of us ladies, and also other women of my fellowship, is we go into a place called Fresno First. And what these ladies are where they're from, these are women who are paroled from prison. And it's like a halfway stop, and it's a fantastic program they have. And it's probably about as many people as that are in here tonight, maybe a few less, it's hard to tell. And a lot of them are like, that are, most of them are more addict with maybe a little bit of alcoholic tendencies. But what I want to keep telling people is, yeah, I was one of those too, you know, and if you're a real alcoholic, you're going to drink, and you're going to keep drinking a lot. And every time we go in there and we carry the message, it is just the most absolutely wonderful thing. And if only one person hears it, then you know what? We've done what we're supposed to do. And if nobody hears it, hell, we stayed sober, and that's all that really matters, you know? I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, I hope my message is heard. I hope my message is always heard. But you know what? I stay sober no matter what. And I think it's time to end. I didn't have any problem talking. You guys, I'm going to read one thing. I told you I wouldn't do a lot of the book. I got to read one thing now. Bear with me. I don't have my glasses, and it's kind of dark. But that's okay. I pretty much have it memorized, so that's all good. For anybody who's new, anybody who's struggling with the God thing, anyone who's wondering, is this program for you? This is at a Dr. Bob's Nightmare, and it's something that I just absolutely love. It also lets us know that I don't just quit one day at a time. I'm quit for good and for all, and that's what Dr. Bob said, and that's part of my lineage, and that's what I believe that we can all have. It says, if you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, or a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think you are strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking liquor for good and all, and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you have been in the habit of showing when you were getting drunk, your Heavenly Father will never let you down. Thank you.